Lando Norris closes the door on the 2025 World Championship. Or has he? Welcome back to Motorsport 101. What is it with Interlagos and just creating dramatic moments? Brazil, you've done it again. Welcome to episode 627 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison. Pleasure to have you, as always. And, well, we're getting into the business end of the Formula One season with the Brazilian Grand Prix. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. It will never not feel weird that this is not the season finale anymore. And, in fact, after the final gap week of the year, we have a triple header to close out the season. It just doesn't feel right. And then we're going to go into the second week of December to close out the year. Weird. But there you go. Yeah, F1 wants 24 races a year. This is what we get. Yay! Woo! Hey, everybody. I'm Joey Harrison. Glad you could join us. And yeah, we have a packed Brazilian Grand Prix to talk about. There was a lot of shit. Title implications, drama, mixed weather. Red Bull making a horlicks of a weekend again, Ferrari and insubordination from the very top, and a whole flock of other shit to get through. So, joining me as ever, Mr. RJ O'Connor, how's it going, sir?
Let's agree not to talk about National Football League football this week.
Why? My team is 8-2. Isn't your team 8-2, Dre?
My team is 8-2, and we've won 7 in a row. Isn't it great?
Look at that. How you doing? Wait, look at us. Look at us. Who would have thought? Not me.
How you doing over there, RJ? Did you have a good weekend?
Well, Vegeta, I'd say things are going great. We can one day test our power levels while the New York Yamchas and the Miami Yamchas sit lying in the... Oh, wait. Miami just beat us, and that's the source of my football-related angst. Moving swiftly on.
So does this make you the Cybermen?
Actually, the Buffalo Cybermen would sound so cool as like a team name for literally anything else.
It's Dragon Ball the Bridge. They took Mike McDaniel, the Miami head coach, into the back and told him, "Congratulations, you stored the equivalent of free Raditz."
All in all, I think it's important for us as a podcast to focus on podcasting and talk about football.
Now you don't want to talk about the race.
RJ's telling us to shut up and pod.
Which is amazing, given he was too busy talking about winning his Super Bowl last week by beating the Chiefs in the regular season. That's a Super Bowl.
I'm aware that that regular season matchup goes either way, mostly towards our side. I'm aware that there is something else to be done in the playoffs. I know this. You don't have to preach this to me, pal.
Yes, we do.
Yep, got to get there first, though, RJ. Got to get there first, you know, which I think is great when you're 8-2.
All I can say is you're welcome, by the way, for our secondhand parts.
They are working wonderfully, I must say. A bit of refurbishment never hurt anybody. Isn't that right, fellow 8-2 football fan, Cameron Buckley?
Yes. Although sometimes, rather than refurbishment, you want to go all new. Like an all-new Honda power unit. Everything went red for 71 laps. Woke up on the podium. Oh, man, he did it again.
Oh, and you know, it's funny how it found new ways to piss people off. We'll get to some of the politics behind that as well a little bit later on. Because, yes, Max Verstappen went from pit lane to the podium. Which could have been more, too. Maybe. We'll talk about that in a little bit too. Lando Norris dominating the weekend, led every single competitive session en route to a double victory. And Oscar Piastri, well, didn't make the sprint at all. And fifth in the Grand Prix. Just like that, Lando's just become odds-on favourite to win the championship. How? We'll talk about that very shortly.
A little bit on the well side of done right now.
Just a little bit. Yeah, it's all I'm saying is Pat Mahomes is looking for his bottle of ketchup to go with his well-done steak.
Oh.
That's I knew RJ would appreciate that one. Also talk about Mercedes coming out of nowhere again. Ferrari and Judd Elkin running his mouth to the point where it's pissed everybody off in the Ferrari internal camp. Gabriel Bortoletto's horrible, terrible, no good home weekend. And if you say his name, Ollie Bearman appears. Again. All of that in the next hour or so here on Motorsport 101. But until then, here's some places you can find us in the meantime. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter at motorsport_101. And if you want to follow us personally on Blue Sky, you can at Dre Harrison, RJ O'Connell, and CBuckley917 on bsky.social. If you want highlights of the show, you can check them out on our Instagram page, Motorsport101Pod, or our TikTok account, M101_podcast. You can check this out on there as well. If you want some written content, you've also got the blog section on our website, motorsport101.com, for full reviews of this weekend and MotoGP's penultimate round of the year, the Portuguese Grand Prix from Portimão. That'll be on our next podcast a little bit later on this week at our usual sort of Thursday slot. Yeah, we get to record this one on a Monday. Aren't you generous? We found some time. We love that. We love doing that here. And if you really like us, of course, you can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our content, audio-wise, on other episodes at least 24 hours before we actually release them to the public. You can upgrade to the $10 tier to listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded, as Ed, Raptor, and Jason are doing so right now. Thank you very much for your continued support, folks. So, without further ado, let's get into the 2025 Brazilian Grand Prix. Arguably the most decisive blow in the World Championship was thrown by Lando Norris in Interlagos as the Brit would take an emphatic double victory to extend his championship lead to 24 points. He won a very tight sprint with Mercedes' Kimi Antonelli after a red flag thanks to a triple spin out of, and I can't believe I get to say this unironically on the podcast again, the turn three of poor judgment.
Judgment!
With Franco Colapinto, Nico Hülkenberg, and Oscar Piastri all crashing out. In the race itself, Norris dominated from start to finish, with Piastri caught up on a safety car restart in a three-car crash, with Kimi Antonelli and Charles Leclerc, the latter having to retire, and Piastri dinged with a 10-second penalty for causing a collision. More on that later. He would only manage fifth over the line, with Max Verstappen on the podium in third, from the friggin' pit lane after only qualifying in 16th. So some extra context here. After that, he had a bit of a disaster in Q1, which we'll get to, for actual qualifying. Was eliminated from that, started from pit lane, broke Parc Fermé, would go on to finish in third. Let's talk about the front first, of course. Let's talk about Lando Norris. Well, double victory. Took the sprint, took the Grand Prix. Effectively a flawless weekend for all it's worth. Didn't put a foot wrong all weekend.
Everything but the Grand Slam, basically.
You know, essentially, that doesn't look like the drive of somebody who wilts under pressure. That doesn't look like a repeat of Sochi 2021. I dare say that looks like the drive of somebody who has ice in his veins, like an Iceman, you know?
Funny how these things turn out, isn't it? Down the stretch, where it matters most, in a what was a one-point championship with four rounds to go, Lando Norris goes and pulls out arguably his two strongest F1 weekends I can remember in his career. And he's now got back-to-back wins and a 24-point lead in the standings. He almost, like, right now, it looks more likely that Lando could wrap this up without even having to go to Abu Dhabi, the way it's going. Like, if he...
That is insane to think about.
Yeah, you would not have guessed that back in Zandvoort when, after his car died, Piastri had a 34-point lead with nine rounds to go, first round back from the break. We're thinking it might be DOA for Lando after that one. He's now almost got a race in hand with three to play. Now, Remember, Qatar is a sprint weekend in the middle of that final triple header. So there's 33 points available in that weekend. But overall, 24-point lead with 83 left on the table. Cam, it's looking real good for Lando now. Real good.
Yeah, it is. And you know what? Your brother got it in one a couple weekends ago. We were discussing it in the Discord that everyone involved just needs to, frankly, shut up and drive a bit.
More on that later, although I can imagine that Ryan Harrison said that
in a different context.
I can imagine he said that through gritted teeth, though.
I can imagine.
Well, and yeah. And you know what Lando has done since that Zandvoort DNF? He's just shut up and driven. And while Oscar has, frankly speaking, kind of imploded on himself, Lando just keeps getting the best of what the McLaren has to offer. And if that's a win, that's a win. If it's not a win, it's still a podium.
This is what Lando did for like 5 years before the McLaren was expected to compete for wins on a regular basis, before it was expected to compete for a championship last year, and then this year. Like, that's always what Lando did.
This is what we were begging him to do down the stretch last year when he was doing a whole lot of dicking around. And this year, it feels like he's learned his lesson. He's not dicking around. This weekend, it was Red Bull who dicked around quite a bit up until the race. And Piastri just never looked like he was going to beat Lando at any stage.
I mean, you look at all the key matchups across the weekend. Sprint shootout, out-qualifies Piastri by 2 temps, qualifies on pole, wins the sprint. The threat actually coming from Kimi Antonelli more than it was Lando himself. We'll get to Mercedes in a bit. Actual Grand Prix qualifying, out-qualifies Piastri by nearly 4 temps, on pole over Kimi again, wins the Grand Prix by 10 seconds. Like, and it never looked like Lando was going to lose. It was a comfortable win for Lando in the end. At no point was he threatened for victory, really. It always looked like he had the fastest car there, and it looked like he had something in hand in case Max pulled off a miracle of all miracles and actually challenged for the win, which
he had the fastest car up the front. There was a really fast car coming through the field, but we'll get to that in a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is exactly, I mean, to quote RJ, I fully agree with him. This is exactly what we've been asking Lando Norris to do for years now, whether it be fairly or unfairly. Execute. Because we all know Lando's had the talent to be able to do this. That's never been the question mark with Lando Norris. From the time he was, you know, 21, 22 and just starting out in a McLaren team that was rebuilding, you know, the talent was always there. And now,
question when of sticking it's the damn landing.
This is the best chance he's ever had to win a world championship. And now, in the stretch, when it matters most, he's now executing because he's put together his two best weekends in Formula One back to back.
Dre, he's overturned what was going to be. He lost 18 free points from where he was going to finish in Zandvoort, probably at best. He overturned a 34-point gap without winning quite a few of those because it was Max doing a lot of the winning in the meantime and has now turned it into nearly a traditional race weekend's gap with 3 to go.
And Oscar's results in a vacuum wouldn't be all that bad. He's finished in the top 5 of the last 6 races. Like, that's not terrible, but
it's not good enough when your teammate's getting it on the podium or winning, or the other guy is getting it on the podium or winning. And you wall a car 3 times in Baku.
Yeah, I mean,
that's good.
And that was one that Lando didn't even really get to punish him all that much for. That was Max taking the big points in Baku.
The thing is, if you want a cross-sport comparison, look at the NBA and look at plus-minuses. Who doesn't love a good plus-minus when you're looking at the box score? Last 6 rounds, Lando Norris is plus 58 on Oscar Piastri. And he's only won 2 out of those 6 races in that time span. Oscar Piastri has not finished a Grand Prix on the podium since that Zandvoort win. That's a problem.
And, That's, in the context of this season, that's like unthinkable. When Lando's only just tied him on wins, and it looked like Piastri was the high floor guy for much of this season. But ever since Baku, it's not all been bad. I still think he was quicker in Singapore, but got barged out of turn one and couldn't make inroads on him again. Everything else has just been relentless body blows from Lando and Max against him, to the point where with Oscar, you're now in danger of finishing third in a two-car championship, and that is never a good feeling. Not when you've led it for 15 rounds.
And when you, there are a number of racing fans in Australia who are having flashbacks to 2020 when, 2010. There are a grip of Australian racing fans who are having flashbacks to 2010 right now with Mark Webber. They're seeing the same story play out, and they're not reaching for the tinfoil. Buddy, the tinfoil is lining every single piece of headwear in their homes, every single piece of clothing in their closets. It's all over the place, dog.
Yes, McLaren clearly, you know, gave a team order to Lando Norris to knock some water onto the curb and just Mario Kart banana Piastri into the wall. Because that's what it looked like when, in the sprint, Norris clips that curb. Piastri goes flying off. Max has the steering wheel upside down to catch it. And two other cars go flying off. It's like someone dropped a triple banana at the Senna S.
It is wild. Again, we'll move into Piastri talk very shortly here. Call it what it is. The curb didn't do its job properly. It was holding on to water that it shouldn't have, and it was just a pure coincidence that Lando ran deep on turn two, threw that water out there, and it nearly led to half a dozen spin-outs. Somehow it was only three. Piastri takes his normal racing line, not knowing there's a patch of water there, and he just spins out. It's an unfortunate coincidence. I wouldn't even really call it a huge Piastri mistake, if anything else. It's just an unfortunate coincidence.
Minimum error with the maximum penalty, because he just backed the car into the wall. We got to respect iRacing, because when they put landmines in the track and you just hit a curb too much and your car falls through the earth and gets crunched, that's what this felt like.
I don't remember that being in the last iRacing DLC, but maybe I missed something in the latest patch notes.
Why am I getting flashbacks to 2003 all of a sudden? I guess we got to talk about the Piastri dive bomb out of desperation, which it was, and it had to be on that restart during the Grand Prix itself, where he sends it three wide up the inside of Antonelli and Leclerc. It looks like Antonelli closes the door on him, not expecting Piastri to come back from that far. And they make contact, and that sends Leclerc out of the race through no fault of his own, really. Piastri,
oh, Father, thou art in heaven.
Dog.
Please save Charles Leclerc.
I'm going to hold my... We're going to hold our thoughts on that in full, but man. I find it crazy that, like, am I nuts for thinking like that would have been an avoidable contact penalty in any other road racing series and everybody would just be fine with it if they watched? But this is Formula One and somehow that has to be litigated.
Yeah, because we have our rules of engagement and we have mitigations for those rules of engagement. And let's break this down to its simplest element. Oscar Piastri was the last of three cars into a three wide. You know what James Hinchcliffe says about the three wides. If you're the first and last into one, you got to be the first out. And he snatches his left front wheel going off into the turn. Definitionally, if you have a snatched wheel, you are out. You are no longer in control of your car. He does hold his line. He's on the curb. 3-1 doesn't go. He hits Antonelli. Antonelli pinballs Leclerc out of the race. Under the driving rules of engagement, he's not far enough alongside, and he's out of control of his car.
Yep.
He's the one hitting someone else. That's a penalty. Even predating these rules of engagement, he still has a locked wheel, and he still hits someone, and he still causes a retirement for another car. And even though they say they don't rule on outcome, we have seen penalties in the past be ruled on outcome.
They literally did with Lewis Hamilton.
We have seen people melt down over them not giving out penalties based on outcome. Silverstone 2021, for instance.
They literally did in this race with Lewis Hamilton hitting Franco Colapinto in the stewards report, where they said because the contact was minimal, the damage was minimal, and that Colapinto was able to continue, they used that as a mitigating circumstance to knock Hamilton's penalty down to 5 seconds. So they do punish on outcome. There's no getting around it. It's a fact.
Yes. Even before these rules of engagement, I think that's probably an avoidable contact penalty.
I agree. Look, we talked about this on the show.
what was the point of even putting it in? Unfortunately, all three of us agree. There's no first take style debate for us to argue about.
Because sometimes the debate is not necessary. Sometimes it's just a conversation. Right. I'm in full agreement with Cam. I said it from the start. Again, I've made it abundantly clear. I know people are starting to now. I saw the race. I saw Elizabeth Blackstock both write articles about this in the last 24 hours. My point has always been this. We said it on here months ago that you cannot apply a blanket set of engagement rules to any motorsport because at the end of the day, there are mitigating circumstances all over the place. There's so many variables that could happen in an incident that you've got to analyze and look at and take on board. Applying one blanket...
implement the black and white to something that is inherently gray.
No, you cannot do it. We've said for months you cannot do it. And this is another example of how it might not work. I can see why people would make the argument that it was a racing incident. I can get there on that, right? I don't think it's completely unreasonable to make that suggestion. It's one of those, on a good day, you might say it's a 50-50 because Piastri does lock a tire, he does lock up going into the corner, but Kimi Antonelli does take a very aggressive line into turn one. And you could maybe make a case that Oscar's got nowhere to go. But by the letter of the laws that we have in place right now, and we talked about this in Catalonia, it was exactly why Carlos Sainz had his right to review in Zandvoort accepted and overturned. If you lose control of your car, you veto the right to the corner. Right there and then. We saw it with George Russell in Catalunya. We saw it with Carlos Sainz and Liam Lawson in Zandvoort at turn one. That's why Williams
lost. George Russell in Coda in the sprint.
Yeah, like we saw. I mean,
I tell you what, we know people that would be hammering George Russell if that was his collision and not Oscar Piastri, not title contender Oscar Piastri.
Exactly, and I'll get to that point in a minute because I want to address that in a second. But at the end of the day, these drivers chose these rules. They chose these rules of engagement. They voted on them. This is what they wanted to do. And unfortunately, sometimes that cord is going to go against you. And I ultimately agree with what my colleagues have said for months, that you need to look at all of these on a case-by-case basis. There was nothing inherently wrong with the international sporting code that we had before we made amendments to it at the end of last year, where the main principle of the rule was, if you overtake somebody, the onus is on the passing car to do it safely. That was as near as we got to a uniform rule, and it worked. And look, even the international sporting code as it's written now, has the word guideline applied to it. It's not a hard and fast rule. You know, there is always going to be a degree of interpretation, which automatically makes this murkier than it already is. By the book, Piastri loses on two counts. One, he locks up. Two, he initiates contact and goes for a dive bomb where he wasn't entitled to space. It's a slam dunk penalty by the book. I'm sorry, people...
He entered what we refer to in the business as the cone of judgment.
And, look, I have one big question to say after the response to this, before we move on to a bit more Piastri talk in general. What is a racing incident now under these rules?
Well, that has been one of the major problems with these rules, is that I talked about this a few episodes ago about we've introduced flopping into Formula One. Because you can make someone go and die on that sword. Because if you bull rush the apex, whatever happens, happens. As long as you don't lock your wheels, you can either make someone yield the place to you or make someone fall on a penalty.
It's exactly what happened with Carlos Sainz and Oli Behrmann at Monza when Sainz goes around the outside of him into the turn four chicane. He's going around the outside. So as long as your wheels are level I think it was axle to axle on the outside, you own the corner if you're trying to pass on the outside. So when they hit each other, Behrmann, who can do absolutely nothing about the car trying to pass him on the outside, gets the penalty. It's a flop. Yeah. Both guys knew exactly what they were
flopping.
Doing.
It's why the Spain incident between Russell and Max before Max blew his fucking top was just... It was like everything bad about these racing rules came to a head, because the other guy, Russell, does lose control of his car. He does hit Max off the road. But because we don't know that mitigating circumstance, because we're not in the steward's office, Red Bull thinks, oh, well, I know he ran us off the road, but probably going to have to not take a penalty here. And then Max went full Gran Turismo.
And even then, on that very podcast, I asked the question, why wasn't George Russell then given a 10-second time penalty for forcing someone off the track and gaining an advantage?
These are the rules of nature, Metal Gear Rising, Revengeance, or whatever. My source
on whether this is a racing incident or not is that I made it the fuck up.
That's basically the stance of the whole thing.
That is these stewards at this point, man.
General questions about Oscar Piastri. You have it here asking, or have we been too protective of Oscar Piastri this whole time? I don't know. I was under the impression that this was a different Oscar Piastri, because we still know people that think that Oscar Piastri is bad on his tires. He's not. He's just fine on his tires like any elite driver. And going into the stretch of the season, yes, I know he struggled at it last year, but you got to think, as last year's Oscar Piastri, without the experience that he has now, was I wrong to think that, like, this would be different?
You would have hoped that it would have been, because this is his first time going at a title fight. But it feels like Oscar has now entered the point where he has a fan base where you can't either praise him too much, because you get demolished for it, and you can't criticize him too much, because you get demolished for it. And I feel like I've been fairly in the middle with Piastri pretty much all season. When he's good, he's been great. When he hasn't been great, it's been not good enough when these are the margins upon which a championship turns. I think that's fair to say about Oscar, because he was leading the title by a lot, and now he's losing it by just under a lot.
To a guy that a lot of people said, and I hate to go back to this point of freezing cold takes RJ, but man, people were really hammering at home that Lando Norris does not have that dog in him. He's the bottle factory. He's the guy who wilts under pressure, not Oscar Piastri.
And that's exactly it, is that we decided to use Oscar as a stick to beat Lando with. And now that role has reversed pretty fucking emphatically down the stretch this season.
I was going to say, I think it's unfortunate the way this has played out across the McLaren garage. Going back as far as 2021 and the infamous Sochi race where Lando Norris had a genuine chance to win that race over Lewis Hamilton and made the wrong call to stay out when the rain came down. I think ever since then, a lot of people have been down on Lando Norris. I think a lot of people have been out to get Lando, from complaints about his execution to bottling to not winning the 2024 title, given McLaren had definitely a stronger car. As RJ points out in our chat, remember Lando no wins. Like, Lando Norris didn't have a Grand Prix victory until 18 months ago. Let's not forget. It's been a long time coming. This is year 7 for Lando Norris in Formula One, after all. And I think what happened is that a lot of people, understandably, got excited about Oscar Piastri when he first debuted in 2023 as this S-tier prospect that had cleaned up the juniors. One Freca, one Formula 3, one Formula 2, all at the first time of asking. He's this witty, you know, quite introverted but quite funny young Australian fella, good sense of humour, came in, was pretty quick the moment the car got good at McLaren. I mean, there was the first half of his first season was rough, but as soon as McLaren got competitive, Oscar was right there with Lando. And we were all, and I think as an F1 audience, we get this shiny hood ornament syndrome, where when someone new and exciting comes along, people will flock to that new and exciting thing.
Shiny new toy.
I think we molded Piastri in 2025 as the perfect foil to Lando Norris being this quote-unquote bottler. While Lando is the bottler that can't execute, here's the cool, calm, and collected Oscar Piastri, even though Oscar Piastri actually hasn't been that in 2025. I'll carry on my point in a second. Can't come on.
Yes. Do we remember how cool and collected he was while he was spinning backwards off in the grass in Australia?
That's my point. Like, he gave... Like,
it's kind of equalized out, hasn't it? Quite a bit over the season, that they've both... Like, both of them have had pretty shocking weekends in the context of this championship. Both of them have had really exceptional dominant weekends. Down the stretch, it's been... You know, Lando has had better bad days, especially in the stretch, than Oscar had earlier this year. If Oscar had a bad day, well, besides Baku, it would be kind of middle of nowhere. If Lando had a bad day, you know, in this last few race stretch, he would still be upper half of the points. You can afford to do that when your car just absolutely beats the field's ass for three quarters of the season.
This is still a 14-win car for this championship campaign. It's still a very, very good race car that is still favourite going into almost every round of the calendar. The point I was getting at here, and to carry on from what Cam said a minute ago, you can look to Australia and the obvious spin-out when the rain came down. You can look at Japan, where he was running third and he begged McLaren to swap the cars around with no valid explanation besides, I'm Oscar. The brake check at Silverstone. You know,
that for me was the silliest one, because he had the field dead to rights at Silverstone pretty much at every stage other than qualifying. And we know what Red Bull did to Max's car to get that car on pole. It didn't exactly work out.
No.
Just both of them have had issues with execution a lot, and much in the same vein as last year. But when it comes down to winning time, you got to execute down the stretch. Lando has. Max has. He's 15 points ahead of Max in the championship.
Yeah. Max that is 39 back.
If you told me that, even after Baku, I would have said that is unthinkable.
Mm-hmm. I go back to the plus minus, 58 points worse than Norris in the last six rounds. That is unacceptable. Like I said, I think I wouldn't necessarily say as a collective we've been this way, but I think we've unfairly molded Oscar Piastri into something that he isn't. I need to remind everybody he's had less than 70 career starts. He's done an exceptional job to be this good in year three. We've not had a guy be this good in the third year of his F1 career since probably Lewis Hamilton. Well,
yeah, the guy who almost won a championship as a rookie, won it in his second year, and like half the starts that Oscar Piastri has now.
Yes, right. But I mean, at the same time, A, Lewis Hamilton. At least for a while, he was a bit good at this car driving thing. I don't know about driving into the back of an Alpine, but we'll get to that later. I would equate it almost to someone like Seb, where Seb, you know, found himself in a title fight in his second and a half year, really, and was still, you know, Ron got the ultra hot start, and Vettel was still a little bit raw down the stretch. And he worked out those kinks the next year, along with the fact that, you know, the Ferrari pit wall is eternal.
Mm-hmm. More on that later.
The best of Seb Reed didn't come around till 2011, I'd argue. Even in 2010, he was still ropey.
Yes, pole position. Oh, what do you know? Another pole position.
Etc. I mean, so like I said, just to wrap a neat little bow on this, Oscar Piastri's a great driver. His talent is undeniable. It's limitless. He can do anything in that F1 car if he wants to do it. We've seen it over the course of this season that he's as good a front runner as anybody in Formula One right now. But it now is the time to start asking questions. If we're going to evaluate Piastri as a world championship contender, the last 6 weekends where he's been comprehensively outclassed by Lando Norris is not good enough. And more questions need to be asked about Oscar's temperament if he's going to challenge for a world championship again. Because right now, it's out of Piastri's hands. Piastri can take every point on the table between now and the end of the year, and all Lando Norris has to do is follow him home. If he does, he wins the title by 2 points.
Yes, so, three more weekends to turn this around.
But he needs help.
He needs help.
Speaking of someone who needs help, and Red Bull.
Man.
Bro. He might be losing the number one plate, but goddamn, he is reminding everyone why he had it in the first place.
Can I share this conversation with two people in the IMSA paddock? Person A, is it possible to award the world championship for someone that doesn't have the most points? Asking for a Dutchman. Person B, Brian France has just the idea for you! Exclamation mark.
Go directly to hell.
Or Sao Paulo. Not the same difference. Sao Paulo's great.
So, for context, sprint shoots out, Max qualifies in sixth. Not a great session. Sprint happens, makes a little bit of progress, finishes fourth, takes advantage of the Piastri crash out, ends up P4. Then, like, Max is really not happy about the setup. Obviously, you now get this period in between the sprint race and Grand Prix qualifying now, where Parc Fermé opens. You're allowed to make setup changes between then and now. Allegedly, they take some advice from Yuki Tsunoda's setup. Apparently, a setup that is softer on suspension and a little bit higher in terms of
ride height. Better mechanical grip, less aerodynamic grip.
Max says the ride is a little bit better, but it's got a new problem. He's sliding everywhere. He slides in turn one. He has no grip. And he ultimately qualifies in P16. And is eliminated in Q1. I've got some fun facts about this, by the way. It's the first time that he's been eliminated in Q1 since Russia 2021, a session he didn't even take part in because of the engine penalties he was due. If you want to go back to the last time that Max Verstappen actually set a lap in a Q1 and got eliminated, China. 2016.
17. And was with 17. An engine issue.
It's only the seventh time he's ever been eliminated in Q1 in his career, and it's the first Red Bull double Q1 elimination since 2006.
Because you know that soft setup didn't benefit Yuki Tsunoda. Max was just seeing how the other half lived for like a one session.
Yeah, like Yuki saying, I'm lapping close to Max. Like, yeah, you got within 300s. Unfortunately, it was for the Chambers pot.
So they go and break Parc Fermé. They swap out
everything.
They swap out everything ahead of the Grand Prix, and he starts from the pit lane because, F it, this might be the best shot at salvaging something out of this weekend. And it worked, despite a puncture.
Yes. Max Verstappen starts on the hards, carves his way to 13th, gets a puncture under VSC. boxes onto mediums, and then, well, what's the line from Rocky, China 2013?
Go racing, Seb.
Yes. We had a motor race. Max Verstappen came through this field with a rage. Beating asses.
He was passing people left, right, and center. He went medium, medium, soft the rest of the way on a three-stop strategy, which is something I can't remember the last time I said three-stop.
He was forced into it because of the puncture on the hards. Might have been a blessing in disguise because, as it turns out, the hards were hardly Dookie. Worthwhile.
Once again, Pirelli takes the hard tire out of the equation for reasons unknown to me. But yeah, like, he ended up, if anything, it was probably a blessing in disguise. Like I said, the VSC stop is a bit of a mixed bag because on one hand, you're getting rid of a hard tire that was punctured. On the other hand, you only lose 11 seconds in Brazil off a VSC stop compared to 20 if it was under green flag conditions. So the only thing he really lost was track position because it was in the middle of a VSC. Comes out, tears through the back half of the field like a hot knife through butter. He ends up actually leading with about 20 laps to go. I love that GP on the radio said, "I can't believe I'm telling you this after the conversation we had in the pit lane before this race started. You are now the race leader." Max's response, "Not bad."
Yeah, for the overwhelming majority of this race, Max was the fastest thing out there. He just couldn't tell because he was having to go through other cars. Is under Lando's gun, though, basically near the end, like Lando's taking time out of him on a fresher medium. Pits onto softs. And yeah. A Mercedes, I'm sure, well, George Russell specifically, heard bass boosted boss music.
Yeah.
Because he broke around, George's ankles into T1.
He passed him around the outside of turn one at the center S. Just a stunning pass. And you know, the crowd is going nuts. Max is now P3. He gets to the back of Antonelli. Pretty much runs out of tire at that point because the soft tire leg was quite high on this race. We saw it in the sprint the day before that Pirelli said 20 laps. It was really more like 15.
It wasn't bad if you could nurse them, but I mean, Max was punching in 1 minute 12s on them, so he was not nursing them.
He went for it. Like GP said, quote, "This is the tire to be on if you can handle the deg, so be gentle." Max was not in the mood to play gentle. And fair play to Antonelli, did just enough to hold him off. He actually made a small mistake on the final lap of the race in Sector 2 to really bring Max in, but Antonelli held on by 0.3 seconds to hold on to second place. Amazingly, second may have been on if Max had just stayed on his medium and does a 35 lap stint to get to the end. I'm not sure the free stopper was the play, personally.
I get what they were thinking. I think
me too.
If he pits on the softs and I don't know, a safety car comes out, he has the three in front of him dead to rights.
Yeah.
That had to be the mentality behind it.
I think so, and I think this is maybe a mentality thing more than it is a logistical or mathematical thing, because I had a couple of people like Sean and James in my Twitter mentions, good people, asking in good faith, was that the play? And I said, I'm no race strategist, but if it were me, I take the aggressive call, because I think you can control your own fate a little bit more. And I think personally, as a driver, I would rather attack than defend. That's just me personally. Some people might see it differently.
I feel that.
But I think it's a psychology thing to a degree. I think if you have the chance to race, chase, and back your driver to attack, I think you take that option. That's just me. I could be wrong. But
yeah, the way I'm looking at it, like there, again, if he gets a safety car, he wins that race. Simple as. Like, he goes around the three in front of him like they've got blown engines. And if he doesn't, it kind of is what it is. Like, let's call a spade a spade. It's probably done. it's done. Unless it's Lando done. Unless Lando DNFs and Max scores maximum points next race, it's done. Yeah, but it was a fun couple of months, wasn't it?
It was. Look, I've said this from day one. The fact we even thought this was possible when he won Baku and he was still down by 70 with six to go, I think speaks more about how much universal respect there is for Max Verstappen as the undisputed number one F1 driver on the planet that we even thought there was half a chance he could pull this off, because he's just that fucking good. And then when he is on it, he is a joy to watch. He is box office television. There's one or two dudes in the world who can pull off what Max did today, what Max did on Sunday. I was transfixed watching the stream as it was happening, because I'm like, he couldn't actually win this, could he? And the fact that, again, the fact
that it was like, for a couple minutes, he made you think. And really, again, had they left the mediums on, I think he does get P2. Because he was fast enough.
The more I think about it, the more I think P2.
But putting on the softs, like, 3 points is not going to make a difference for him. You take the risk, and if you get the safety car, you can go take 7 points out of McLaren. And if you can't, well, you had fun doing it anyway. Honestly, this might be better than last year. Because last year, Max did put himself in the position to get the rub of the green with the red flag.
Mm-hmm.
This actually worked against him with the safety car early and getting the puncture. And he still raged that car onto the podium.
He's now had a podium finish from every position in the top 10. I also want to say 14, 15, 17, 18, 19th, 20th, and pit lane.
Yes, he now has the most podium finishes from different starting points.
17
of
them.
And had he got Antonelli for second, and just to touch on Antonelli, man, this kid's good.
Superb weekend. He was stupendous
this week, all weekend. Mm-hmm. Only person who could give Lando anything to think about.
Outstanding.
This kid's going to be special. Back on track.
Have you seen the apparently, like, Antonelli does so much better in race weekends where he's driving where titanium dioxide can be used as a legal food additive?
Yeah, he's pounding those Skittles back in the cockpit.
He's down.
I love a good titanium Skittle.
You know, remember the days of Marshawn Lynch eating his Skittles on the bench in between drives for the Seattle Seahawks? Like, yeah, load them up.
Yeah, that's Kimi Antonelli.
Yeah.
But like, I don't even remember what I was talking about. Something about Max. Some bullshit. Yes, pit lane starts. Had he got Antonelli, he would have tied Prost for the best result from the pit lane.
Which is just, that's bonkers. He is a stupid son of a bitch.
Any statistic where you would have tied Alain Prost, I'm like, oh, it must be pretty good then.
Must be pretty good. You know, Alain Prost, who at the time may have been the greatest of all time when he was in F1 in his prime. Yeah, not bad. Not bad at all. I also love the fact that a lot of people got mad about this, and I had people genuinely tweet me during the race saying, Dre, we need to ban cars from Formula One who break Parc Fermé on Saturday afternoon. And I'm like, part of me is thinking, what crack cocaine have you just smoked? like, for some reason, people now got mad at this because, oh, you can't just break Parc Fermé if you don't like your setup. And I'm like,
That's called breaking Parc Fermé.
Like, that's what the pit lane start is for.
It's in the spirit of the rules that you would break Parc Fermé if an accident happens or you have a catastrophic mechanical failure, not to just re-roll the weekend if you botch your setup on qualifying. I couldn't understand it from that perspective, but how are you going to enforce that?
I think that is manure. What are we going to say about Lewis in 2021, who pulled this off arguably even better, given he won in 2021? That's just, it, like, I think people are just mad that Max. Same deal with fucking McLaren going, so that engine's coming out of Red Bull's cost cap allocation, right? And we're like, no, because engine allocation is explicitly split from cost cap.
Yeah, that was established the moment they put that rule in for the cost cap in the first place. No one is stopping anybody from doing that if you have a bad day. Let's not forget, Max Verstappen wasn't even the only person that had a pit lane start in this race, because Esteban Ocon did the exact same thing, took on a whole brand new ICE, and started the race from pit lane. But no one's asking for him to be removed from the result because he exploited a rule. This has been around since we really started having engine allocation limits for an entire season. I've done it, I guarantee you, half the people that complained about this have played a Formula One video game, had a bad qualifying session, and thought, fuck it, let me add another engine to my allocation, because them suckers in Cody's days were built not to last more than like 3 Grand Prix.
Mercedes in 2016, when Lewis had lost a bunch of components out of his pool, spent one practice session swapping engines in and out of Lewis's car like Lego blocks. And they did ban that, but it's like, whatever you want to do with an engine, what, are we going to make it so the engine has to blow for you to change it? Because how do you then quantify, like...
I was going to say...
How do you quantify what an engine's worn or not?
I was going to make that exact point, like, how do you know an engine can't run anymore? Like, that's...
They'll have the data. They'll have the odometer on it and everything.
Like, that's very... That is a grey area that would be just as ripe for exploitation, quite frankly. No, this is...
We have this 2015 Honda engine here. As soon as that odometer starts ticking, it blows up.
Yeah, to borrow... I think Cam's buried the lead here. People don't like it because it's Max.
Yeah.
I think that's exactly what this is. I guarantee you...
Max didn't like it in 21 when Lewis did it.
That's how fandom works. And quite frankly, if you're a believer in the phrase, quote, spirit of the rules, please just watch cricket instead.
Yeah, don't watch Formula One.
Don't watch Formula One.
Don't watch racing. Watch cricket.
Watch cricket. It's a lovely sport. They still believe in that there until Johnny Bairstow leaves his crease too early and Alex Carey stumps him. That's a cricket joke. If you like cricket, you'll understand that one.
For any believers in the spirit of the rules, go look up the 1997 Winston All-Star Race.
And it'll be banned tomorrow. Next segment.
Hey, guys. I got this headline to read. Ferrari chairman John Elkann says the company's Formula One drivers Lewis Hamilton and Charles Leclerc, quote, need to focus on driving and talk less. Elkann said in an Olympic sponsorship in Rome on Monday that the team's mechanics and engineers were performing well, but, quote, if we look at the rest, it is not up to scratch. He added, quote, and we definitely have drivers who need to focus on driving and talk less because we still have important races ahead of us, and getting second place is not impossible. Elkann's remarks reflect the frustration and disappointment at Ferrari, who came close to becoming Constructors' Champions last year, but have failed to win a Grand Prix this season and have now dropped to fourth in the Constructors' Championships. But they are said to meant to be taken in a constructive way as to spur to improve.
What the fuck is wrong with this guy? Cameron Buckley has fled the scene.
Trey, before he gets back.
No, this is not me in my Steve Dangle fan era. This is me in my Steve Dangle hater era.
What is he on about? Your engineers are performing well. Lift and coast another 25 meters for me, Charles. Go to hell!
Lyco is now part of the long-suffering Ferrari F1 fan vernacular is crazy. Look, Lewis Hamilton did not have a good Grand Prix. He didn't have an okay weekend. The Grand Prix, he clattered in the back of Franco Colapinto, which was very clumsy beneath a driver with that much experience. And oh, by the way, 7-time world champion, more wins than any other driver. I get that. I understand it. Charles Leclerc is completely blameless in this. What was he supposed to just, like, I don't know, let Antonelli's car clip through him?
He should have pressed the no clip button on his steering wheel. He would have been all right. Yes, Lewis Hamilton is looking like the most done of well-done hamburgers right now. Up against Charles, but that's neither here nor there. That's about the best part of Ferrari's weekend. You know what? You know what the worst thing is you can say about Ferrari now?
What's that?
Do they matter? At any stage of this Formula One season, has Ferrari mattered?
Well, none. There was a time that Hamilton won the China Sprint.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool. What else have they done? Slipper's second and fourth in the Constructors' Championship.
Congratulations. A sprint win is the equivalent of finishing a Grand Prix in seventh. Sorry, sixth, actually. You know, that's what a sprint win is worth.
Lewis would have killed for that this weekend in the Grand Prix. You have 7 podiums this year. And do you know why? Because Charles Leclerc is the baddest motherfucker that has walked in your doors in a while. It ain't your engineers, John.
No.
It ain't your management, John. All these facilities, and you make a piece of crap like this.
But hey, at least John Elkann didn't get caught committing a light amount of tax fraud. I said it before. John Elkann is right now is acting like somebody that if Zach Brown acted this way,
we'd kill him.
All sorts of shit. But
imagine Christian Horner talking this shit at the start of the season.
But because it's John Elkann and he's a quiet and relatively soft-spoken American boss of the legacy F1 team, unlike Zach Brown, who is more loud and boisterous and a boss of a legacy Formula One team, we don't usually give him that kind of crap.
Yeah, well, John, you know, and John Elkann, I swear, the compliments he was giving Ferrari's World Endurance Championship team, who committed the full championship sweep on the weekend. You see, we just introduced balance of performance, and then Ferrari will start winning. Another 20 kilograms to McLaren Motorsport. Well, they also almost felt like a backhanded smear against Ferrari in F1. This is what happens when we have unity. Have the unity of the car that we all know is the best car in the WEC grid is carrying a small moon. And when they toned that down just a little bit for Bahrain, they got a 1-2.
Yeah, it's... It says a lot to me that Elkann was in Bahrain to celebrate that World Endurance Championship sweep that Ferrari pulled off. Their first World Endurance Championship in 53 years. Congrats to them. Delighted for Antonio Giovinazzi, who became a dad and won a world title in the same day. Doesn't get much better than that, quite frankly.
The hair back, man.
Oh, yeah. That is a sexy day right there. But no... The thing is, it says a lot that Elkann was there rather than Interlagos. It's like when Zach Brown rolls up for the IndyCar team and not the F1 team every once in a while. No, the thing I don't get, right, is that, and I made a short talking about this on various social media platforms because I had a lot to say on this, and I'm not going to repeat myself entirely here. The ironic thing about this is that Ferrari have actually done a pretty good job of handling themselves, despite this being quite a bad season on paper. Like, there's been moments in years past where Ferrari have had complete and total meltdowns. In-house, out-of-house, we've all seen it. That's not happened this year. They've generally, at least in my perception, put on a pretty united front. They've defended Charles, they've defended Lewis, despite his obvious struggles. You know, he's not had a podium finish so far this year, but they've generally got behind him. Fred Vasseur has always loved Lewis Hamilton for 20 years now, from the time he was with ART as a junior. He's the perfect guy, in my opinion, to manage someone like Lewis Hamilton, and one of the most likable people in the Formula One paddock, point blank. And let's not forget, many of the Italian press, who is the nastiest local press, the press that will always put pressure on Ferrari to win at all costs, they rallied round and got behind Fred when his mother passed away that weekend in Austria. We didn't know it at the time, but his mum died that weekend. That's why he wasn't there. And that was the same weekend that some of that same Italian press was thinking he was about to be fired. This is a team that has actually, in my opinion, galvanized better than most, given the circumstances. So what the fuck is John Elkann doing driving a wedge between the engineers and everybody else in that team, especially given the car itself has not been good this year, and then trying to use that media weapon and give that local press even more ammunition to dunk on Ferrari? It's bullshit. Yeah. It's terrible.
You know what it sounded like when he was at that Olympic sponsorship event? It looked like he looked at the Wikipedia results for all the Ferrari teams and just decided to speak on it based on that knowledge.
I mean, with him, he's talking about car improvements. Where? They threw the house at the back end of this car mid-season, and it made no difference. If anything, they fell off for a couple races while they relearned it. I mean, I'm not going to burn Ferrari for basically starting over with a new car, because, frankly speaking, McLaren has just as much of a heavily changed car to last year, and it went pretty fucking good over in Woking. But if Ferrari wants to be evaluated in the context of major championships, this is just mediocre. This is the most mediocre they've looked probably since 2021, when we knew they were not going to be competitive. Even then, like, they would still punch above their own weight. At what stage has Ferrari fought above their own weight this year, other than just miraculous Herculean drives from Charles Leclerc? And even then, those aren't enough most weekends, because the car is wearing out its plank, and it's wearing out its brakes, and it's overheating its engine, and it's not very good on tires. But I mean, other than that, it's great.
Ferrari has 362 points. Max Verstappen has 341.
Max Verstappen. And the RB21 up until about 7 races ago was a bit of a bus at low speed.
Yuki Tsunoda is still in hell in the second Red Bull right now. They are
another second driver will fix it, RJ, I promise you.
Oh, brother, I just want the pain to end.
Yuki Tsunoda is Jorge Lorenzo's 2019. If you know, you know.
I mean, they gave him a 10-second time penalty for taking out Lance Stroll. All I'm saying is that was such an accurate kill, they should have taken 10 seconds off his race time.
The only thing missing was the Call of Duty hit marker for a headshot. Man got to the hairpin, threw another car, and just tapped Stroll on the rear, and round he goes. It was a perfect kill. Wonderful execution. I mean, again, I can only echo what RJ has said. This is a messy bitch of a team. This is a team that is sitting fourth in the constructors. They're going to finish fourth in a three-horse race, which is perfect for the prancing haunts, quite frankly, the way this is going right now.
Like, you know, it really does feel... Like, comments like that feel like the prelude of the major Ferrari reset that we got in 2014. Where, remember Marco Mattiacci?
The one that drove out Fernando Alonso. He was still one of the best drivers in the world.
Where everyone, like, you start making comments like that, and eventually everyone just gets sick of one another. Charles Leclerc is... like my 1C driver of the year in Formula One right now.
Second Maybe best driver 1B. In the world. He's the number two driver in the world. It's him and Russell been for some right time.
Now. Yeah. He and Russell have been so good this year, just getting everything they can. And he has nothing to show for it. Lewis, Ferrari has not done him favors with adapting to the car. and his side of the garage is still incompetent as hell, and he's doing himself no favors either. Up to this point, I really felt like Ferrari would carry on as it is into next year, see what happens with the new regulations. This feels like a prelude to, hey, how do we justify blowing this team up?
Well, look at Oliver Bearman's results this weekend, I guess. We can start with that.
I think that goes beyond just for slotting another person into the other Ferrari.
This is a team that let Carlos Sainz walk, and Carlos Sainz is split as a rim splitter, but I generally lean on the fact he is a very good racing driver. Then they went all in for Lewis Hamilton, and it's not worked out so far. He's earned the right to more time to figure this out. He's Lewis Hamilton. And I think I'd be more than inclined to give someone of his caliber the benefit of the doubt, but he needs to step it up. However, John Elkann, with those comments, is deeply concerning for me as an outsider, given he is chairman of the board at Ferrari. You're meant to have a much firmer grip of your racing team and what is happening in said racing team. And if your observation of the Formula One team going through Brazil was that Charles Leclerc was part of the problem, you are fucking dense, quite frankly. And it's embarrassing that the chairman of the board is that far off base. I want to be angrier about this, but quite frankly, given that John Elkann is a billionaire, it's no surprise that he is dangerously out of touch and he refuses to pay his taxes to the point where he's been sued by his own mother. I think that kind
of
says
it all. You know how bad you have to fuck up in life for your own mom to sue you?
On many spiritual, fundamental and business levels, if your mother is suing you for 1.25 billion euros,
or if you're the former driver of the number 8 Budweiser Chevrolet in the mid-2000s.
Yeah, or
yes,
if
you're being unfavorably compared to Teresa Earnhardt, RJ O'Connell, please, my blood pressure is high enough.
I have nothing more to add to this segment.
Nothing could drive the point home quite like that. Moving on, Gabby Bortoletto. I'm so sorry, man.
First of all, that wreck that he had in the car, liquefied in the sprint. I have not seen a Sauber break apart like that since Kubica at Canada 07.
That's the thing. He's going down the main straight with the DRS open, going for an overtake. He's at 339 kph.
210 in King's English. 210 miles an hour.
Yeah, it is damp offline. He hits the wet stuff. He hits one wall at, what was it, 34G?
31 G's to the left-hand wall. He goes straight into the outside wall. He's still going at 170 miles an hour.
Into straight concrete.
Hits the outside concrete wall at 57 Gs. For perspective, when Verstappen hit the outside wall at Copse at Silverstone in 2021, which Sky Sports still thought was a beautiful Christmas island, that was at 51 Gs.
Yeah, and let's not forget, it kind of came out after the fact Mac was badly concussed from that crash.
Yeah.
Even he had tunnel vision driving a Coda. That car, it looked like someone put that thing through a paper shredder.
Which is why it was a surprise to see it almost get prepared in time just a few hours later to almost go out for a run in Q1. Didn't quite complete the job in time, but you know what? That's okay. Most of the job is done before the Grand Prix on Sunday. Gabriel Bortoletto's first Sao Paulo Grand Prix in front of his home fans, and Lance Stroll just nerves him off like he's not even there. And for the second time, Lance Stroll draws the ire of the local crowd in Brazil.
No, actually, I think we should have taken 20 seconds off of Yuki Tsunoda's race time, citing street justice.
this was a citizen's arrest.
Gabby was quick through the weekend as well up to that point, but I mean, we paper shred one F1 car and then he knocks the left front corner off of another. Not especially his fault with that one either. Just a a nasty. I mean, he's still got plenty of time to have a better record in Brazil than Rubens Barrichello, but it is the omen is bad.
My first immediate thought was, oh no, the Barrichello curse has returned like 10 years after he retired. Like, oh, are we doing this again? Really? Like, no. He had such an amazing reaction because we had a fantastic driver's parade before the race had started, but people are in these little legend cars going around, and Bortoletto got his own car. And if you could hear
people the crowd, nuts.
They were going nuts for Bortoletto. And, like, this isn't even like a Felipe Massa, who was a world championship contender and race winner of years past.
Felipe Massa, who has as many Brazilian Grand Prix victories as the big three.
Yes. And Bortoletto, who is, again, very harshly, I may add, sitting in 19th in the Drivers' Championship, despite having 19 points this year, was getting standing ovations. They loved him here, and I'm really glad he got that warm reception. It's just such a shame that his Grand Prix lasted, a minute, essentially. They actually cut to him after he got back to the paddock, and you could see him hugging his mother in tears. His whole family was there, and they were obviously there to see him race for the first time, and obviously they were all just devastated that, you know, their boy's home race lasted a minute and change thanks to Lance Stroll, who for once took an outward left turn rather than right. Anyway,
I'm not touching that one.
We've got a number of people that are not going to be online enough for that. Let's quickly move on to Oliver Bearman's strong weekend, sixth place, following up the fourth in Mexico.
This man's on fire right now. Holy shit. He's making a very late push for Rookie of the Year here. I mean, ninth, fourth, and sixth his last four Grand Prix. He's now on 40 points. He's 3 points behind Isaac Hadjar, who we've penciled in for Rookie of the Year for most of 2025. Bearman's only got 3 points less than him.
And the penalty points are starting to trickle off a bit.
Yeah, he's down from 10 to 9.
Quite a few, very quick. You still got to be careful. But yeah, I mean, generally speaking, if the Haas is on pace on a given weekend, Ollie is going to get the most out of it. That's just how most of the season has gone.
Over Esteban Ocon, who we know is one of the best midfield drivers. And look, I love me some Esteban Ocon. It's a shame he never panned out to be a world champion, but like, that guy's still good. I don't care what anybody tells me.
Still a Grand Prix winner.
He's still a Grand Prix winner, but Ocon has only scored points one out of the last six Grand Prix. Bearman has scored points in four out of the last six, and there's been a fourth and a sixth involved. There's no getting around it.
Starting from the pit lane in a Haas isn't quite the same as starting from the pit lane in a freshly engined Red Bull.
Although, I must admit, 20 points now covering sixth through ninth in the Constructors' Championship, with three to play. Racing Bulls on 82, Aston Martin on 72, Haas on 70. Kick Sauber has 62 points and are sitting in ninth right now.
Sure. I mean, you could see how close this midfield is, because we had a train from about sixth on back through the rest of the field cross the line this race.
It was incredible. If those who didn't see it, right at the end, Liam Lawson, who I think was on 50 lap old mediums, ran the distance at the end, was holding off Hülkenberg behind him. Holding off his teammate Isaac Hadjar at the end. You know, we essentially had, I want to say, 7th place Lawson down to 16th place Lance Stroll, covered by 6 seconds. Incredible.
You're right.
And no one could do anything because they were all in one massive DRS train in the dirty air.
And also, before we get out of here as well, shout out to Pierre Gasly. Point in the sprint, point in the Grand Prix. Hell of an effort.
In that piece of junk.
That boy can drive. Like, despite the dirty air, despite, you know, all the mess. Damn good Grand Prix. Damn good. One of the best of the year for F1. Really enjoyed that. Had a bit of everything. Strategic intrigue, title implications, drama, a lot of passing, good racing. Really enjoyed it.
A segment of judgment.
Who doesn't love a good segment of judgment? Judgment. Always a fun time. Yeah, Brazil, it just hits different. It's just such a good Grand Prix.
One of the best damn racetracks on the planet. It really
is. I love it. I love
it. Bring the finale back here. I know the oil money speaks.
I would love nothing more. Formula One takes its final gap week this weekend. It's back the week after for the final furlong, the final triple header to close out the season. Round 22, Las Vegas. Actually, quite looking forward to that one. Las Vegas has been pretty good since it came on the calendar. So Vegas starts us off with the last three races of the season. Wonder if George Russell will be favourite for that one, given the conditions. We'll have to wait and see. We'll be back with two MotoGP episodes in the next week and change. We've got our normal episode on Portimao coming up later on this week. And then we'll have their season finale, round 22. God, I'm tired. At Valencia. Couple of things to discuss. Who wins that one? Who gets third in the championship between Marco Bezzecchi, and probably Marco Bezzecchi. Great. So we'll see how that plays out. The final round of the year, when we'll put a neat little bow on the 2025 MotoGP season. And hey, Jorge Martin and the Maverick Vinales is back. What's not to love there? So, with that in mind, we will see you later on this week for more MotoGP here on Motorsport 101. But until then, I've been Dre Harrison. They've been Cam Buckley and RJ O'Connell. Thank you very much for watching and listening. And we'll catch you guys next time. Sayonara.
Later, y'all. Congrats, Skippy.
And that, now and forever, is why they don't call it the Honda Motor Company for nothing.
Just before I hit the stop button, as a fan of his from the days of automotive journalism, rest in peace to the great Quinton Wilson.